is VOA News. I'm David Berg. The impeachment trial of President Donald Trump is set to begin in the Senate next week after the House officially notified the chamber it was delivering the articles of impeachment. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has more.
The yeas are 228, the nays are 193.
That historic vote, mostly along party lines, was to approve the transmittal of the two articles of impeachment to the Senate. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi signing the notification.
So sad, so tragic for our country that the actions taken by the president to undermine our national security, to violate his oath of office.
House impeachment managers carried the articles to the Senate. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says they will be accepted in a day, and the Supreme Court justice will be sworn in.
I'm confident this body can rise above short-termism and factional fever and serve the long-term best interest of our nation.
President Trump denies wrongdoing in his dealings with Ukraine. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
President Donald Trump and China's chief negotiator signed the so-called Phase 1 of a trade deal between the two countries on Wednesday. We get more from AP's Ed Donahue.
The agreement eases tensions between China and the U.S. and is expected to boost exports on the U.S. side.
Together we are righting the wrongs of the past and delivering a future of economic justice and security for American workers, farmers, and families.
The agreement is intended to ease some U.S. economic sanctions on China, but does little to force Beijing to make major economic changes. Trade attorney Melissa Duffy thinks it's a good start.
There are some short-term wins, but it remains to be seen whether the long-term benefits will actually happen.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer calls the agreement weak and feckless, saying President Trump acts tough on China.
When jobs and livelihoods are at stake, he buckles.
Ed Donahue, Washington.
This is VOA News. Russian President Vladimir Putin promoted Mikhail Mishustin, the head of Russia's tax service, to lead the country's government on Wednesday. As Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports, that capped an extraordinary day in which Putin proposed major constitutional amendments and accepted the resignation of the government of his longtime Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev.
The announcement came shortly after Putin proposed a vote on constitutional amendments that would shift power from the presidency to parliament. Putin's presidential term ends in 2024. But although he hasn't said what he wants to do next, the changes would allow him to, theoretically, enter an enhanced role as prime minister instead at the end of the term. In a national address on Wednesday, he said that the constitution was adopted over a quarter of a century ago to cope with a political crisis, and that times have drastically changed since then. He's already been prime minister in the past. He's been president or prime minister for 20 years.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani called for national unity Wednesday after an eruption of protests over Iran's downing of a Ukrainian airliner. Tehran initially said that mechanical problems had caused the commercial jetliner to go down before admitting, days later, that Iranian military personnel had mistakenly shot it down and killed all 176 people on board. That revelation sparked days of protests in Iran as people expressed their anger at the country's leaders. In an address broadcast live on state television Wednesday, Rouhani said that if there was a delay by the military to disclose information, let them apologize. The Iranian president also demanded a full explanation of the catastrophe and cited the need for changes in how the Iranian government runs the country. A lawsuit filed by prosecutors in the Virgin Islands says that convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein used two private islands to engage in a conspiracy to traffic and abuse girls. AP's Julie Walker reports.
At one point, the suit alleges Epstein and his associates organized a search party to capture a 15-year-old girl trying to escape by swimming away. U.S. Virgin Island Attorney General Denise George says even after Epstein's suicide, his associates continued to cover for him.
The conduct of Jeffrey Epstein and his associates shocks the conscience and betrays the deepest principles and laws of the U.S. Virgin Islands.
The lawsuit seeks hundreds of millions of dollars from Epstein's estate in the Virgin Islands, including his private islands, Little St. James and Great St. James, which the suit values at $86 million. I'm Julie Walker.
For more, visit voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Abate in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia formally asks Sierra Leone to extradite an anti-government protest leader.
We are not seeking to control the governor of Sierra Leone. What we are seeking is for the governor of Sierra Leone to perform his international responsibility and request of that and repatriate Mr. Costa.
Eugene Nabu is the Liberia's information minister. This week's clashes in Sudan have raised concerns about the loyalty of the military. Zimbabwe joins a currency swap with China. Human rights activists and journalists are concerned about deteriorating media freedom in Uganda. And there is an opposition protest tomorrow in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We want to tell the whole world that we cannot continue to see people being killed in Beni and in the surrounding areas.
Martin Fayulu is a former opposition presidential candidate in the DRC, and 2019 was a year of mass protests in Africa. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Liberian government says Sierra Leone must honor its diplomatic obligation by extraditing Henry Costa, the leader of recent anti-government protests in Liberia. Information Minister Eugene Nabwe says Liberia has sent a diplomatic note to the government of Sierra Leone requesting the extradition of Mr. Costa, not because of his political activities, but because of what he calls his criminal activities. Costa was arrested Tuesday at Longi International Airport in Freetown. Sierra Leone Information Minister Mohamed Souare told the BBC Focus on Africa program on Wednesday that Sierra Leone was a democracy and would not take orders from any other government. Costa told VOA Wednesday morning that he would be killed if he were to be extradited to Liberia. Information Minister Nabwe described Costa's claims as preposterous.
Mr. President, since he became President of the Republic, has not displayed any inclination of being a dictator or a president who assassinates people. In spite of the unfair attack on his government, we have retained a civil posture. Why is it that currently in Liberia, there are no political prisoners, no journalists in jail? This is the government that is now being accused of wanting to assassinate somebody who has come to Liberia severally, has organized protests, has made several statements against the president to say that he will drag the president from the mansion. It has not been touched. So it's just totally untrue. You know, all of these political shenanigans are all aimed at damaging the image of the president and the image of the government.
As you know, Mr. Minister, Henry Costa showed up in Sierra Leone, where he told us that he was being detained by the Sierra Leone immigration or government on the instructions of your government. Did you ask Sierra Leone to detain him and to return him to Liberia?
He fled the country and surreptitiously appeared in Sierra Leone. He was therefore arrested by the Sierra Leone immigration. We have since issued a diplomatic note to the government of Sierra Leone requesting his extradition for that crime and other crimes that he has committed, including all of the comments against the government. Yeah, he stated that he's going to use the family, he's going to use violence to remove the government. And so we are thinking to bring all of these to book. So yes, it is true that the government of Liberia has sent a diplomatic request to the government of Sierra Leone requesting the extradition of Mr. Costa. But it is not because of his political activities, it is because of his criminal activities.
Or if he committed any crime, Mr. Minister, did the government charge him?
We are submitting all of the requisite legal documentation, and we are asking Sierra Leone, if it was the extradition treaty that those countries have, to have him extradited back to Liberia. So the legal paperwork that will include the charges and also include the indictment will be forwarded to Sierra Leone. So for you to say that there is no charge is not a truthful statement, because the governor of Liberia has just enumerated some of the charges that we have against him. So we want him to come back to face the full weight of the law. And we are requesting Sierra Leone to cooperate in keeping with the treaty that we have with that friendly country.
So what do you think has been the response of the Sierra Leone government? I was looking at a statement the Minister of Information of Sierra Leone told the BBC Focus on Africa that the government of President Mada Bio will not take detention from any government regarding the ongoing saga involving Henry Costa.
Neither is it the wish of the governor of Liberia to detain to another sovereign government. What we have done is to invoke the bilateral treaty of extradition that we have with Sierra Leone and requires that Sierra Leone, in keeping with a legal document that both countries signed, repatriate, extradite Mr. Costa. We are not seeking to control the government of Sierra Leone. What we are seeking is for the government of Sierra Leone to perform its international responsibility and extradite and repatriate Mr. Costa.
Eugene Nambu is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. There is an opposition protest tomorrow, Friday, in the Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa, and other cities to highlight the killing of civilians in the east of the country. An investigation by the UN Joint Human Rights Office in the DRC found that at least 700 people have been killed and 168 injured following attacks involving the Hema and the Lendu community in the northeast province of Ituri between December 2017 and September last year. Friday's demonstration coincides with the anniversary of the death of national hero Patrice Emery Lumumba. Protest leader and former presidential candidate Martin Fayulu says the protesters will also express their displeasure over what he calls the continued balkanization of the DRC.
We want to tell the whole world that we cannot continue to see people being killed in Beni and in the surrounding areas. And also we want to tell the whole world that we are fed up of that idea of cutting the country in many parts, what we call balkanization. So we want to protest and to tell the whole world nobody will balkanize Congo, and we, as people of Congo, cannot let anybody to do so.
Why have the demonstration on the 17th of January?
The 17th, because it's the date that Lumumba, our national hero, was killed. And as everybody knows, that Lumumba was the first one to talk about balkanization. That's why we want to tell everybody that on the 17th of January this year, all of us will be Lumumba and talk for the country, do whatever we can to keep our country unified.
You talk about now twice about balkanization. Who is balkanizing the DRC?
Everybody knows that since 1990, our country has been attacked by outsiders. The main attack came on March 1993 when the Rwandese troops entered Congo and did many killings for 10 years. And that was reported to the mapping reports. Everybody knows that.
Mr. Fayulu, there is a new government in the DRC now. Are you saying that the government president, Tshisekedi, is that government doing enough to deal with what you're talking about?
He's doing nothing at all. If Mr. Kabila has done maybe 55% of the project of balkanization, and for the 1 year of Tshisekedi, since he was nominated, he has accomplished 15%. If you go to Beni, they are pushing people of Beni out of their own territory, and then they are trying to replace them by people coming from outside. This is what is happening in the Kivus, and this is what is happening in Ituri.
Do you need permission to have this demonstration on the 17th?
There is no permission in this country. You have to inform the administration what we did everywhere. The demonstration will not be only in Kinshasa, but it will be in some other towns in Congo. And we have already written to the administration.
So, Mr. Fayulu, after the election, you have said that perhaps you were the elected president. Do you still feel that you were the elected president?
I didn't say perhaps. I said that I was the winner, and we had the proof. We had Financial Times, TV5, and other media. They have given the figures. We also have the leak from the Electoral Commission server, which gave us the results close to what we had and close to the Catholic Church. I continue to say that Tshisekedi was nominated, and Kabila again did something unbelievable to put our country in the legitimacy crisis again.
Martin Fayulu is a former presidential candidate. He was speaking with us from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 16. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe has joined Japan, South Africa, and Nigeria in signing a currency swap deal with China, which it hopes will improve trade between the two countries. Blessing Zulu of View Zimbabwe Service has the details.
Zimbabwe's finance minister, Professor Mutuli Ncube, confirmed the deal in an interview with the state media on the sidelines of a meeting between Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa and Chinese Foreign Minister Wang He at the State House in Harare Tuesday. The top Chinese official is on a five African nation diplomatic offensive, taking him to Egypt, Djibouti, Eritrea, Burundi, and Zimbabwe. Beijing says the visit marks its 2 decades of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, said Ncube.
We've entered into a currency swap arrangement. What this means is that there are those who will be investing in Zimbabwe from China, and there are those who require their proceeds to be remitted back to China, which is normal. So the idea is those individuals will then swap so that those who are investing in Zimbabwe are able to give them a domestic currency, and they use the foreign currency that they're bringing in for investment to pay those who are exiting. It will strengthen our capacity to honor our liabilities with China, but also attract new investors from China.
Harare, under targeted sanctions by Washington and the European Union, has increasingly turned to China for assistance. Some economists have warned that Beijing is creating debt traps for desperate African nations like Zimbabwe. University of Zimbabwe economics professor Tony Hawkins tells VOA Zimbabwe Service that the deal shows desperation on the part of Zimbabwe to revive its struggling economy.
It's a sign of desperation of the times. The real issue for the economy is getting some kind of international agreement. And all these policies that they're chasing after at the moment are all efforts to minimize the impact of not having access to IMF money, World Bank money, Africa Development Bank money, and so on.
The chief executive officer of the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce, Chris Mugaga, concurs.
This measure can be viewed in that light of desperation, knowing fully well that Zimbabwe is in a quagmire where the current conundrum is hitting not only the business, but even the ordinary households who are living in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe is facing its worst economic crisis in decades, characterized by hyperinflation, currency and fuel shortages, and power outages that can last for 18 hours. Nearly 8 million people, roughly half the population, are food insecure, according to the World Food Program. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
Clashes between Sudanese security forces in the capital Khartoum this week have raised questions about loyalty and stability in the military and the country's transitional unity government, with some Sudanese seeing the violence as a serious threat to the nation's security and the move towards democracy. Namba Muhideen reports from Khartoum.
Gunfire continued to echo in the streets of Khartoum early Wednesday, terrifying residents and putting military troops in sensitive locations on edge. Although Sudan's government says the situation is stable, many Sudanese are skeptical. Independent military analyst Omar Ahmed acknowledged there is reason for concern.
Ahmed
says the biggest challenges facing the upcoming period is the existence of different troops who carry different loyalties and possesses heavy weapons, linked with the different interests of regional access in Sudan that makes sustaining peace and forming unified troops the only solution. Political analyst Tariq Othman says the clashes suggest trouble brewing for Sudan's new government. Osman says via WhatsApp that what happened could be described as a dangerous indicator that can threaten the political change in Sudan if it's not contained and followed by serious procedures to prevent it, especially given that the country is witnessing such political and security fragility after the political change happened recently. The gunfire began Tuesday when security troops who were loyal to former President Omar al-Bashir refused to hand over assets and weapons to the new authorities. Sudan's transitional government had earlier issued a decision either to unify the troops in the military or dismiss the soldiers. Security troops demanded a $30 million after service bonus and blocked roads in some neighborhoods. An estimated 13,000 soldiers work for Sudan security and intelligence forces and participated in the military operations since the 1990s. Many of the protesters who helped topple Bashir last April demanded the security forces be dissolved and their weapons to be collected. This protester, Isra Ahmed, said she was not surprised at yesterday's clashes. Ahmed says, as citizens, we called many times for the importance of dissolving the National Security Forces troops and not allowing any service members to carry weapons except the military. Ahmed adds that she expected such clashes to happen and hopes to prevent the country of such events that only could be prevented by restructuring these troops. On Wednesday, Sudan's military maintained control of government buildings and guarded sensitive locations, but many Sudanese are still worried that the security situation could quickly unravel. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Human rights activists and journalists say they are concerned about deteriorating media freedom in Uganda. They say journalists are highly oppressed by security officials who, they say, deprive them of their ability to contribute to free and fair elections. As Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Kampala, the rights groups are calling on security officials, notably the police, to respect the rights of journalists.
Richard Chiyimba, the head of programs for the Uganda Journalists Association, says journalists in the country are sometimes harassed, beaten and intimidated while covering events organized by opposition politicians.
We feel really bad and frustrated. We don't know what is coming in the future. The situation will just worsen because this is just the beginning. Yeah, because of the fear that some journalists are fearing that they are beaten. If a security operative beat up them, they don't compensate them. So, the only alternative is to quit the profession. The seniors have quitted the profession, so they leave the profession to younger ones. It's very, very challenging to Uganda's journalists.
Livingstone Sewanyana, the executive director of Foundation for Human Rights Initiative, agrees. He says journalists ought to be allowed to freely do their work so as to educate citizens during the election time.
Our population remains ill-informed about the process. So once the media is not enabled, there isn't significant investment in civic education, then it becomes difficult for the electorate to be aware of the process and to make their choices free of any undue influence.
Recently, some journalists have been battered or tear-gassed by the police while covering opposition politicians. Fred Enanga, Uganda police spokesperson, denies the police of wrongdoing. He blames journalists of bias. He says journalists should work with the police while covering important events.
We really need to work together. But if you're going to cover some of these events of public interest, we can work together and take the journalists through our policing arrangements. What has been happening, you find that some of these journalists, there is a way that they amplify some of their reporting methods and even inflame the situation.
Activists say they're engaging security operatives to forge a way that will enable reporters to freely do their work in coming days. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
2019 was a year of mass protests on the African continent, with demonstrators filling the streets in capitals like Conakry, Harare, Khartoum, and Kinshasa. While the causes of their grievances varied, the protesters share one unfortunate characteristic, a harsh response from security forces. VOA's Anita Power reports from Johannesburg.
There was rage across the African continent last year, says Human Rights Watch in its annual report, with no sign of cooling down. Anger at entrenched leaders in Guinea and Sudan, poor economy in Zimbabwe, and over conflict displaced people in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Ethiopia. But the public outrage is good to see, said the rights group's Africa Advocacy Director, Karine Kaneza Nantulia, at the launch of the report in Johannesburg.
We've seen, I think, the average men and women of the African continent taking agency, being agents for their own, for the changes they wanted to see. We saw an increase of peaceful protest in different countries. The second, I think, takeaway is that we've also seen a backsliding from government in terms of political and civic space.
In some countries in Southern Africa, that meant police aggression and repression, says Human Rights Watch. Dewa Mavinga is the rights group's Southern Africa researcher.
We expected more from Southern African leaders, including President Ramaphosa of South Africa, based on their commitments and promises to fulfill people's rights across the region. But we saw that there was a constriction of space for human rights defenders. In countries like Zimbabwe, there was a clampdown on protesters, excessive use of force by the police and the other arms of the security forces. There was no accountability whatsoever.
But there was also hope, as Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed won the Nobel Peace Prize for liberal reforms and making peace with arch-enemy Eritrea. Babatunde Olugboji is Human Rights Watch's Africa Deputy Advocacy Director.
He's done quite a few great things in Ethiopia. He's released political prisoners. He's actually reforming some repressive laws. He's sort of made peace with Eritrea. So things are moving in the right direction, mostly. There is still a lot to be done in Ethiopia.
South Africa takes over the African Union's rotating chairmanship this year, notes Human Rights Watch's Southern Africa researcher, Mavinga. With the continent's most progressive constitution, South Africa's leadership raises some expectations, he says.
South Africa has to step up to the plate. It has to deliver on human rights and draw back on Mandela's legacy. But we will have to continue to push.
And as 2019 made clear, African people will be behind them, demanding their rights and that their voices be heard. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Liberian government says Sierra Leone must honor its diplomatic obligation by extraditing Henry Costa, the leader of recent anti-government protests in Liberia. Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi says Liberia has sent a diplomatic note to the government of Sierra Leone requesting the extradition of Mr. Costa, not because of his political activities, but because of what he calls his criminal activities. Costa was arrested Tuesday at Longyear International Airport in Freetown. Sierra Leone Information Minister Mohamed Souare told the BBC Focus on Africa program on Wednesday that Sierra Leone was a democracy and would not take orders from any other government. Costa told the VOA Wednesday morning that he would be killed if he were to be extradited to Liberia. Information Minister Nnamdi described Costa's claims as preposterous. There is an opposition protest tomorrow, Friday, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kinshasa, and other cities to highlight the killing of civilians in the east of the country. An investigation by the UN Joint Human Rights Office in the DRC found that at least 700 people have been killed and 168 injured following attacks involving the Hema and the Lendu communities in the northeast province of Ituri between December 2017 and September last year. Friday's demonstration coincides with the anniversary of the death of national hero Patrice Emery Lumumba. Protest leader and former presidential candidate Martin Fayulu says the protesters will also express their displeasure over what he calls the balkanization of the DRC. And clashes between Sudanese security forces in the capital Khartoum this week have raised questions about loyalty and stability in the military and the country's transitional unity government, with some Sudanese seeing the violence as a serious threat to the nation's security and the move towards democracy. That is it for this Thursday, January 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States are expanding in Africa. HBCUs on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 62nd annual Grammy Awards show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.